Blog Talk Radio.
Guy with you here on another Sunday afternoon. QT manning the switchboard for us today. He's hugely excited. Some show notes if you're looking for wrestling today. Shimmer running up in Berwyn, Illinois. KDW in Memphis, Indiana. WCCW in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. ECW in Houma, Louisiana. The South Jersey WrestleFest in Woodbury Heights, New Jersey. SWA in Franklin, Ohio, PPW in Ringgold, Virginia, DOA running Troutdale, Oregon, and NWA Blue Collar with a show as usual on a Sunday in Portland, Oregon, where I will be later this afternoon.
And it looks like we have Dave Penzer on the line with us. Dave, are you with us?
I am with you. How's it going?
Oh, very good. Signed I and QT here.
I'm sorry, I missed that. Yes, please call me David.
All right, Dave, our first question for you is going to be one we ask everybody when they come onto our show for the first time. What led to you being in the professional wrestling business?
I was a big fan growing up of championship wrestling from Florida. Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, the Funks, lots of great memories, Joe LaDuke and the Briscoes. And I was a mobile DJ, so, I could talk on a microphone. I did, you know, bar mitzvahs and, you know, sweet 16s and weddings and stuff like that. And I had a connection in the wrestling business with a company called Global Wrestling Alliance. It's a long, you know, convoluted story, but this knew my dad, who was a psychologist. But, so I got a gig there, just it was sort of, you know, an indie show. They had, you know, Adrian Street, Ox Baker, Corporal Kirstner, the Iron Sheik, and then some local talent, the Malenkos at the time, Norman Smiley, who was a rookie. So I was ring announcing for them. I did some, you know, promotion for them as doing like fundraisers and stuff, you know, and just somebody who wanted to, you know, get their foot in the business. And anyway, that ended up going under. And me and a guy named Bob Roop, who was a famous amateur wrestler, kind of famous in Florida and San Francisco as a professional wrestler. And me and him ended up buying their ring and promoting indie shows in South Florida. And then he got a call from Ole Anderson, who was the booker for World Championship Wrestling, and they had been tight for a while, and he wanted Bob to come in as an agent. So Bob came in as an agent, and I started bringing up enhancement talent to Florida, sort of like an agent. I didn't get a paycheck from WCW. I got a small piece of the pie from the enhancement guys, and then WCW paid for the gas and the rental van. And just started running guys for interviews. They did a lot of interviews back then, you know, before the show for all the different market-specific ones. And, kind of just people started to know me. People started to trust me. There was an opening, and it was a competition between me and a guy who had announced for WWE. And I got it. I think I probably got it by default because I was coming up anyway. But it was for the B shows, the BTV shows. So I got the beat team job, and then after a while, Gary Capetta decided to leave, and they promoted me, and I guess, as they say, the rest is history. That's the short version. You'd hate the long version.
Well, when you started with WCW, I'm sure that was a different animal than what it was there in Georgia and Florida. What was it like going into a national company from a regional company?
Well, you know, it was the guys that I grew up watching, the Rock and Roll Express and Ric Flair and Sting, and you know, I was a fan. So the Road Warriors and the Steiner Brothers, and you know the talent that they had back then before, you know, it really caught on and went big. And you know, Brian Pillman, Tom Zink, those guys. So the talent was much bigger, but to be honest, you know, they really weren't, you know, they were drawing 1,000 instead of 250 or 300 that the other company was drawing, but you know, they were having a hard time getting it going, especially for the non-televised house shows. So you know, it was a step up because you're working with the guys, you know, we're working with the guys that you watch on TV every week and you know, and doing angles. And so, I mean, it was definitely cooler, you know, it was definitely you've sort of made it sort of thing, you know, even if it only lasts for a little while. But, you know, until we really caught on, it was hard. It was really hard. They weren't drawn very well. And the only reason back then, I think, that, you know, and I've heard people say the company was even still in business, was because Ted Turner was loyal to keeping it around because it had, you know, really done wonders for his business, you know, when George Championship Wrestling was getting the ratings that it got. It allowed him to start the CNNs of the world. So he was very loyal to it.
Was there a difference as far as what you did as a ring announcer on the house shows versus the television, especially early on, what it was like when it got hot?
I mean, there always was. You know, TV, you know, and sometimes TV tapings could last, you know, if they did three, when they did Worldwide and WCW Pro, which was the ones I started doing, you know, it'd be a three hours of wrestling. So, you know, you had to keep them hot the whole time, and it was hard. You had to get creative, really creative sometimes, to keep the crowd into it, because, you know, you could always in post-production put in crowd noise, but it just doesn't look and feel the same. You know, you watch TNA, and you know, TNA has an interesting product. I sort of give them a lot of credit for planning so far ahead and doing this little tournament that they're doing and everything, try to keep expenses down. But you know, you watch their TV and they're the people that are coming to their shows, some of them are wrestling fans. The ones that are on the floor, because I was there, are wrestling fans, and they're regulars, and they know the people. But the ones that come in that are sitting in the stands, for the most part, they're just want to experience, sort of like when WCW did it in Disney, they want to experience television taping. And they're not particularly wrestling fans. They're just there to experience that at Universal Studios as part of their experience. So, you know, you really have to kind of bribe and, you know, I know in TNA we would, you know, take people backstage, which was, you know, in WCW you never thought of. But, you know, TV, you really have to get the fans in. You know, house shows is just about entertaining. They're there for an entertaining evening. You want to promote the things that you're supposed to promote. You want to get them excited about the main event. But, you know, you don't have to keep them going for three hours of, you know, back then what was primarily squash matches. So it's a whole other animal. And, of course, house shows are a lot easier, but TV is a lot more adrenaline.
Now, in your entire career, who were some of the hardest people to announce for, whether it be just a name that was hard for you to really grasp or someone that just had an entrance that was kind of different that was making it a little bit harder for the ring announcer to get through what he needed to do?
I don't know if there's anything that stands out. I can't roll my T's. I just was born without being able to do that. So you know, the Rey Mysterio, I would have loved to have been able to roll my T's for the Mexican guys, but I just didn't have the ability to do that. So, you know, that would have made it so much cooler, you know, as far as my style goes, but, you know, to stretch out some of the names. But there wasn't really anybody that was tough to announce. It was tough. What was tough was when somebody had a last name with only one syllable. So, you know, either had to draw it out or do it really fast. And sometimes that was kind of awkward. But, you know, a lot of times I do it really fast. I wouldn't draw it out because if you draw it out, there's nowhere to go with one syllable. So, I can't, no, you know, you know, like Jerry Lynn. You could stretch out Lynn or you could just do it fast. But, you know, if you're doing Mysterio, that has Mysterio, four syllables, so you could, you know, stretch that out. So, you know, that's some of the things that nobody probably even thinks of unless they're a ring announcer or, you know, an MMA announcer. But, you know, hey, if that's my worst challenge in what I did, then it wasn't too bad.
I know that WCW would hold some outdoor shows, especially when they did the Road Wild pay-per-views, and they'd go to Sturgis, but there's also a few tapings for Saturday night and other shows outdoors. Was there any logistical problems or other problems that you ran into for outdoor shows?
It's an interesting question, actually. I've never been asked that. So good question on your part. I'll tell you what, yeah, it's always, you know, outdoor shows are always a challenge for various different reasons, and I'll give you three examples. The Road Wild shows, the weather was always great, but the fans weren't particularly wrestling fans, and, you know, instead of clapping, they would rev their bikes up. So it was really unique atmosphere. I wouldn't say in a positive way. I wouldn't say in a negative way. It just wasn't what you were used to. So you didn't get your typical wrestling fan reactions. So that was unique. I can remember we did one on Venice Beach in California. It was a pay-per-view. And there was like a 3 or 4 time delay in my announcing. So I would hear myself in my ear, and then I would hear myself again, then I'd hear myself again, then I'd hear myself again while I was still talking. And it really, at first, I don't know if you ever watched that show, you could hear me really slow and pausing because it really threw me at first. I didn't know what the heck to do. And I finally had them turn the live in my ear up so high that I couldn't hear anything. And then I kind of got used to it a little bit. But at the beginning, that was really, really tough. And then I can remember we did one in Charlotte, a WCW Saturday Night Live show in Charlotte at a race car event. I forget what it was called, the Charlotte 500, whatever it's called. And so the weather was really bad, and I'll never forget it. We said, I said, all right, we're going live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And as soon as I said 1, the sky opened up and it poured, and we were live. We had to keep going. So, you know, outdoors is always unique, you know, but I think unique is fun. But those are three different examples of three different things. One, the sound effects, one, the crowd for a themed event, and one, the weather, Mother Nature, that, you know, that threw us a little bit and threw me a little bit. So very good question, though.
Now, when it does rain like that, obviously it's going to make things very tricky for the wrestlers because the mat's going to be slippery, the ropes are going to be slippery. Did you have to, were you able to kind of pass things along to the wrestlers as they got in the ring as far as the conditions that they were going to be facing once they got inside and started?
Yeah, it was sort of like a train wreck in a lot of ways. You know, you can't, you know, it's so bad to look at the damage, but you can't help but watching. You know, because, you know, obviously when it was pouring out, you know, now remember, it's a 2-hour show and it poured for about 30 minutes. So once we got going and we were able to dry up the ring and commercials, it was fine. But those first 30 minutes, you know, the guys were, you know, you had a 10-minute match where the guys were doing, you know, arm bars and, you know, a lot of mat wrestling. And, you know, it was one of those things like it didn't look great to watch, but you couldn't stop watching because you never knew what was going to happen. But eventually we got it dried and you know, we got back to normal. But I'll just never forget, I said 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and as on cue that the fans were supposed to start cheering, the rain started pouring. So, you know, it's one of those things I'll never forget. But, yeah, it was challenging for the wrestlers. I was glad I didn't have to wrestle.
In your career as a ring announcer, was there ever a problem for you as far as having to deal with a slippery mat or something like that when you were getting in and out of the ring? As I know, wearing dress shoes, sometimes those are fairly slick to start with.
Yeah, if I remember correctly on that one, they just kept me out of the ring. We had a cover, and they just kept me out of the ring on that one. Not, you know, I'd trip every once in a while. You know, everybody's human, but nothing – nothing that, you know, out of the ordinary, no.
In professional wrestling, and up until the last few years ago when the bigger companies started hiring full-time medical staff, sometimes there would be some scary incidents as far as injuries and unplanned things, and they just had to roll with it a lot of the times. What were some of the scarier incidents that you've witnessed on shows?
Well, we were doing a house show. I don't remember where it was, and it was Fit Finley versus Brian Knobbs in a hardcore match. And Fit Finley was a neighbor of mine in Peachtree City and a family friend. And they set up a table, but it was like a formica table in the corner, and threw Fit Finley in. And it was almost like a cartoon. Instead of, you know, the tables normally break in half when you put your body weight in them, he went right through the table. I don't know if you remember hearing about it. He went right through the table. He sliced his ligament in his leg. They had to rush him to the hospital. We finished the show. I went right to the hospital, and he actually had drop foot. He couldn't move his foot up and down, and they thought his career was going to be over. I'll never forget. I had tears in my eyes, and he was saying, "Don't worry, laddie, it's going to be okay." You know, the Irish accent, but he was eventually able to. He's a very spiritual guy, very religious guy, and you know, I don't know if it was his religion or if it was his sheer will, because he's an amazing guy. But he was able to eventually gain full strength in his foot, and he came back and wrestled, and now he's an agent for WWE. So, but that was really scary at the time because he was bleeding pretty crazy. I remember on I think it was Thunder when Goldberg punched the. Bill Goldberg, who was our hottest guy, punched the window, and he was supposed to punch it with a tool, and the tool fell out. He didn't want to be embarrassed, so he just punched it with his fist and almost hit a ligament and had to be rushed to the hospital. That was pretty crazy. Luckily, he got out with just having to get about 50 stitches in his hand, but could have been a lot worse. Could have been the end of his career. So those are two that stand out, but you know, there was a lot of scary things. You know, you could call it fake if you want, and I guess technically it is. But it's a, you know, they're getting their, you know, rears kicked, and there's a lot of scary moments where these guys get hurt, and you know, you get to know these guys, whether you're friends with them or you just, you know, acquaintances. You know, Pitt Finley was a family friend, but you know, Bill Goldberg was a good acquaintance, but, you know, I wouldn't call, you know, we didn't travel together or anything, but, you know, we hung out and after the matches sometimes and told stories and did stuff. But you know, you get to know these guys, and you never want to see anybody get, you know, hurt in their career. You could lose your life, as we've seen a few times, knock on wood. So, you know, yeah, it's always scary when they're, you know, when you think somebody might be injured, when they get a stinger or get a neck injury. You know, just quite frankly, that the fact that there's not as many injuries as there is a testimonial to what great shape these guys are in.
When there was an injury, especially on television, like, for example, when Buff Bagwell had the neck injury on Thunder, and they have to spend several minutes stabilizing him before they can move him, what was your role as a ring announcer in that situation when there's a live show and there's going to be several minutes before they can do anything else?
You know, that's a very unique situation because, you know, in other situations like that where I would have, you know, if it wasn't an injury like that, a serious injury, if it was a technical difficulty where I would have kind of entertained the crowd, you don't want to lose the crowd. But you don't want to be disrespectful to somebody who might have just been paralyzed and you don't know. So, you know, I usually took my cues from the producer, Keith Mitchell, or Craig Leathers, the director, the executive producer, the announcers. You know, I would, at that point, I'd get on the headset and say, all right, we don't want to lose the crowd, but we don't want to be disrespectful. You know, what do you want me to do? You know, and you know, that way you leave it to the, bosses. And you know, it's a fine line. You know, obviously, it's a fine line between losing the crowd and being disrespectful to somebody's career. So those are always unique experiences, and never not ones that I ever enjoyed. But just kind of walk the line. You know, you sound serious, but you tell them what's coming up. You know, we're sorry that, you know, and, you know, we'll let you know how, for example, Buff Bagwell's doing. But, you know, I do want to remind you that still to come is our main event, you know, Bill Goldberg versus Kevin Nash, you know, whatever it is. You know, so you don't lose them. But it's a fine line and one that I was never real comfortable with, but you got to do what you got to do.
In a similar vein, was there ever anything that happened unexpectedly that totally threw you off and maybe made it a little bit hard for you to continue on for a few moments?
Yeah, there was one time in Philadelphia. It's a pretty well-known story if you live in Philadelphia. There was one time in Philadelphia, and you know how the fans in Philadelphia could be. They're not the easiest people in the world by any means. I love the Philadelphia fans, but, you know, they're pretty tough. And we were doing Nitro. It was a live Nitro, and it was Thunder, and it was being preached live to tape. And I said, all right, you know, we're going to go, you know, live on Thursday night for WCW Thunder in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 again. The opening played, the pyro went off, and all of a sudden everything stopped. It ended up being for like 30 minutes. I had no clue what was going on. It ended up that there was an altercation, I think, between Scott Hall and Terry Taylor, who was an agent at the time. And they were dealing with that. And then there were some technical issues because they had started the show without and already lit the pyro off. And how are we going to splice this together? And I basically did an Andy Kaufman, if you're familiar with Andy Kaufman. I ran out of things to say. You know, I was trying to entertain and I was trying, you know, we were trying to do it. But, you know, that 30 minutes for any crowd is a long time after you get them. The key is you got, you know, they were so excited because, you know, they started the show and they're all hyper. They're, you know, this is your chance to be on television. Here the pyro goes off. Everybody always cheers when the pyro goes off. And then just stopped dead for 30 minutes. That's a long time. And it felt like about 2 hours to me. And I ended up, like Andy Kaufman did a few times in his career, I got Diamond Dallas Page's book off the announcer's table, and I just started reading the book. And they started booing me, and that was at that point, they were entertained by the fact that they were booing me, and I was being boring. And, you know, look, it got us through the show, and, you know, and we finally got going again, and it was all in good. It was all good natured. It wasn't in, you know, it wasn't bad. They understood what was going on. They understood I was sweating my, you know what, off, and so that was a tough night though. And people still ask me about that night, you know, how I felt. But, you know, I read about a chapter of Diamond Dallas Page's book over the microphone, and it was an interesting experience. I'll tell you that much.
Positively, Paige saved the day that night.
I wouldn't say save the day. I don't know that day could be saved, but I would say salvaged. How about that?
There we go. Salvage the day. Well, we have a game we like to play, a little psychological game called Word Association. I'll throw out the names of some people that you have come across in your career, and the first word or two that pops into your head to describe them, that would be the answer. Are you prepared to play around?
Sure, let's play.
All right.
Just one word? I'm allowed one word?
One to two words, but we won't disqualify you if you throw out a few.
Okay.
First name, Buff Bagwell.
Lots of potential.
Malaya Hosaka.
My first wrestling crush.
Ooh. Gene Okerlund.
The best of what he does at all time, of all time.
Dave Hebner.
You know, I don't know. I don't know that I've really met Dave Hebner other than one or two times when he was in the back at TNA, because he was always in WWE. So, but Earl Hebner is a great guy, one of the best.
Jeff Jarrett.
Friend.
Booker T.
Innovative.
Kevin Sullivan.
Madman mixed with brilliance.
Scott Norton.
Strong.
La Parca.
ugly.
Jerry Lawler.
One-liners? King is too easy.
Scott Hudson.
One of the nice ones.
Medusa.
Classy lady.
Shane Helms.
Underrated.
Raven.
Smarter than too smart for this business.
James Storm.
Redneck, I guess.
The last name, Jim Powers.
Lifelong enhancement. And that's not a diss. That's a compliment. He was able to work 20 years making good money as an enhancement guy. So.
Absolutely. One of the people that often was kind of a scapegoat for things going on in WCW, but someone that was extremely important to the company, wore many hats, is Tony Schiavone. I know a lot of the fans in the later WCW years kind of turned against him, saw him shilling every match as the greatest match, but he was actually very good, and he did a lot of backstage work that most average fans aren't aware of. What was your relationship with Tony Schiavone like?
He was my boss. He was the guy that I reported directly to. I was doing, aside from doing the ring announcing, I was an assistant television producer. I did stuff in the office in the CNN center and associate producer. And so he was the guy I reported to. He was the executive producer for all of those shows at the time before Nitro started. I don't know if he was for Nitro, but he was for Saturday Night and Worldwide and Pro. And Tony was a company guy. Tony worked his butt off. You know, he was there all the time. He probably worked 80 hours a week. He did what the bosses told him, even if the fans didn't like it, because the bosses were the ones that were paying his paycheck. So, you know, he was a company guy, and you know, if you're going to get on him for that, then you know he'd probably take it, because I think he prided himself on being a company guy. I think he still does. You know, with the news channel that he's a sports director for, and the Braves organization, and the Georgia Bulldogs. So, you know, I think if Tony went down as being a company guy, if that was his legacy, I think he'd be very, very pleased with it.
In a lot of promotions back in the 90s and the early 2000s, drug testing was kind of spotty. A lot of companies ended up having some pretty severe problems with the talent getting in trouble with drugs and having problems. Nowadays, it's much easier to get help from the company. But in the 90s and early 2000s, for someone like yourself, did you see many serious problems with the drugs that were affecting the day-to-day operations of the company and the shows that were being put out in front of the fans?
There were some. I'd be lying if I said no, and I'm not a liar. But you have to understand the nature of the business is it's a very grueling business. You're on the road, you know, for the most part, 25 days a week, a month, I'm sorry. And the wrestlers, of course, are beating themselves up, you know, back then in WCW in front of 500,000 people. And then you go back to the back, and there's doctors there that are marked that will write you a prescription for whatever the heck you want. No limitations. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, it wasn't a healthy situation, but it just was sort of evolved that way. And, you know, we lost a lot of guys in that era due to the issues. And that's very sad and it's a shame. You know, I was lucky that I just would drink alcohol. I didn't ever went there. But But you know, it was easy to obtain, and you know, got a lot of guys felt like they needed it. So, you know, look, it's a difficult business. You know, people know what they're getting themselves into. No, you know, I don't think anybody gets in the wrestling business, and if they do, if they get in the wrestling business thinking it's going to be easy, they very soon learn that it's not. It's not an easy business. There's a lot of guys out there that are killing themselves on the indies for $50 and a couple of slices of pizza to try to make it to the next level. And, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, you sort of sometimes have to be what's the word I'm thinking of? Sorry, I just lost the word. But, you know, you just have to be, you know, manage your life in the right way. And I think that it's a much better. I think that wrestling's in a much better place right now. Like you said, WWE offering free rehab to basically anybody in business that's ever, you know, had a history. I think in WCW or WWE or ECW, I think is a wonderful thing. I mean, you could say a lot of bad. You know, I've never even really thought about this until we got talking. But you know. I know that a lot of the fans complain about the direction of the characters in WWE and, you know, how everybody except for a few are basically booked, even Steven. And, look, I wouldn't disagree with that, by the way. But, you know, look at it from a personal standpoint, you know, look at what they're doing. They've saved so many lives, most likely. You know, I don't have a count. Nobody will have a count. But what they've done in that and philanthropically to the – I think that's the word – to the wrestlers – you know, from that era and, you know, and continue to offer is nothing short of amazing. So, you know, you could give them a hard time about their angles and storylines and even Stephen booking, but you know, a lot of the fans should really look into the big picture of life and give them a lot of credit for what they've done. So, but yeah, it was a different time. The culture was different and, you know, a lot of guys got caught up in it, and it's just a shame. Some of them were able to get out of it, and some of them, unfortunately, it consumed them. But, you know, it's like that in life, you know.
Very well said.
Thank you.
When you went to TNA, what were some of the similarities and what were some of the differences that you noticed right away going from WCW as a national company to TNA as a national company?
TNA reminded me a lot of WCW when I first got there, trying to compete with WWE, trying to be relevant. And, you know, I did another podcast, I think earlier this week or late last week. And somebody asked me about the differences in WCW, you know, there was a lot of pressure on me that I put on myself to not lose this gig. That was, you got to think at the time, that's my dream job. And you know, I really didn't have anything else to fall back on. And if you, you know, if you don't have athletic ability or a proven, what's the word I'm looking for? Job experience, like production or director or, you know, or an announcer, play-by-play announcer. Really the easiest thing to be in wrestling, if you don't have the athletic ability, which I certainly don't have, is to be a ring announcer. You're talking a microphone. I'm not saying it's easy and I'm not marginalizing the job by any means. That's why I always did extra stuff. I always, you know, that's why I did production. That's why I did assistant talent relations. That's why I did you know, all the different things that I did, because I always wanted to have as many opportunities to, if somebody came in to run the company and, you know, their kid wanted to be a ring announcer. So, but, you know, so there's a lot of pressure on myself because, like I said, there's really nothing to fall back on, you know, and I had finally gotten to where I wanted to be. After WCW ended and after the XWF I was a part of, I started a company with some partners, had nothing to do with wrestling. It became pretty darn successful. And that's when I got the call to go to TNA. So I don't want to say I was cavalier about my time at TNA because I always make sure that I'm as professional as I could be. And you know, and I do care about, you know, I did care about sticking around because it was a good paying gig part time. It was, it was a fun gig, you know, hanging out with people I haven't hung out with in a long time, Mike Tenay, and meeting people like Don West, who's a super great guy, and some of the other guys. And but it just that pressure wasn't there. If I lost TNA, which I eventually did after about a 5-year run, you know, there was always you know, I had my company to fall back on. So I was able to enjoy it a little bit more. But you know, it was similar. Going back to the original question, it was similar, quite frankly. You know, it was two struggling companies trying to stay afloat and going after the big guys. And for whatever reasons, WCW was able to do it, and TNA just wasn't ever able to get there. And, you know, it could have been the television network, you know, not wanting to go head-to-head, and when the ratings weren't great right off the bat, kind of pulling back on that. Nobody will ever know. But I had a lot of fun at TNA, so always be a TNA fan.
At this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I know that he has some questions, so I'm going to pass things over to QT for a while.
Sure.
Well, thank you, Sangai. Hello, Dave.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. I'd like to expand on word association that Sangai covered, and you did so eloquently by answering with one word. That rarely happens on Turnbuckle Turmoil, one word. Yes. How about Gold Dust?
Over the top. Can I tell you a little story about that? Can I tell you a little story about that?
Yes.
I knew Dustin because obviously we hung out together after the shows. We, you know, he was pretty much a cowboy like his dad, you know, cowboy boots, you know, always, and a man's man. And so I happened to be sitting on the couch with my wife, who knew him a little bit just from being around it a little bit. And when he came out dressed as Gold Dust with the hair and the makeup and all that, and I would say probably that's one of the top five moments in me and my wife's 25 plus year relationship, that we were so shocked neither of us could say a word. I'll never forget that moment. You know, there's not a lot of moments in life that when you're 49 years in like I am, that you never forget exactly where you were and your reaction. And that one I'll never forget. I think the only other one that I'll never forget from WCW, WWE Monday Night Raw, is when Bischoff came out as the new general manager. And I happened to be sitting on the couch with my wife. She doesn't watch a lot of pro wrestling, but we happened to both be there, and it was like hell froze over on that one. But anyway, that's sorry to get off track, but that's that was it.
Wow. All right. Were you a big fan of Mini Dust? Mini who got extra frisky with Booker T's leg.
God, you know, quite frankly, I don't even remember that.
Oh.
I don't even remember a Mini Dust, and I certainly don't remember getting frisky with Booker T's leg. It sounds like something I'd probably try to forget, quite frankly.
Well, after we hang up, you'll have to go on YouTube and look at Gold Dust, Mini Dust, Booker T encounter.
Do I have to?
Well, we would prefer this. Yes. It's one of those YouTubes that I never cease to tire watching. Yes.
Okay.
Especially
right,
the
I'll
reaction of Booker T. Yes.
Okay. All right, I'll do it.
Okay.
All right, you want to continue with the word association?
Yes, how about ODB?
Interesting character.
All right, how about Natalia Neidhart?
Great talent.
Great talent. Okay. All right. JBL. JBL?
Yeah, I'm thinking about this one. I want to be careful.
Oh, okay.
I've never really talked to JBL, so could I not answer that one? Because I don't want to say something based on things I heard, because that's not fair, and I've never met the guy, so I really couldn't give you an honest assessment of him. I'll give you an answer. Wealthy.
Ooh, okay, that's a fair assessment. Yes, wealthy. Okay. Yes, I hear that he has done and held his own on Wall Street. Yes.
From what I hear, he's done extremely well.
All right. How about Eric Young?
I don't know. The first thing that comes to mind is Canada, although that's pretty weak.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll put down Canada. Okay. Now, Dave, you mentioned you worked in Philadelphia. Have you done any work with Combat Zone Wrestling that is based in Philadelphia?
No, I never have. I don't think, quite frankly, I've heard of Combat Zone Wrestling. I know it's real, electrical wires and barbed wire and glass. And, I might have seen pictures, but I don't even think I've seen it, quite frankly. But, no, I've never done any work. But, I don't know. From what I hear about it, I don't want to be negative because I've never seen it. But, I don't know why guys put themselves through that kind of stuff for, unless they're making, $500,000 a year, which I doubt they are in that organization. So that's just my two cents on it, but what do I know?
Okay. All right. Are you a big fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia? And if so, did you see the episode that had Roddy Piper on it, who was selling acorns out of the back of his station wagon?
Now, what is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia? It sounds familiar.
Oh, well, that's a sitcom, a long-running sitcom on television, and it deals with a pair of brothers who run a bar in Philadelphia, and Danny DeVito is on the show.
No, I've never seen it. I apologize. And then I don't remember Roddy being on it, but Roddy was a great guy and would be sorely missed in this business, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, well, you've got to see this episode. When we get off the phone, look up It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Roddy Piper episode or appearance.
All right. I got homework now. Now I got two things. I got the mini dust. So now I got homework from your show, but I'll do it, I promise.
Well, I think Sign Guy would agree that It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with Roddy Piper takes precedence. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Dave, is it true you took a lot of art classes in high school, and this led to your interest in Australian airbrush tattoos?
I started Australian airbrush tattoos here in the U.S. It was an Australian company. I had a few business partners, one who's a graphic artist in Australia who created a program where you could cut a stencil of it, basically any image, and took the company from nothing really in the U.S. to a million plus dollar grossing company at one point. It's now sort of lost some of its legs, but we went on a heck of a run for about 12 years, and it's still in business, more of a seasonal company now. But we've done a lot of big things. We're in a lot of big places, but it's not artsy. I couldn't draw something if you waved $100 bill in my face. So I'm certainly not an artist. It's anybody could do that job. We've had them at WrestleMania and SummerSlam Fan Fest. We had them for years there. Probably we had a 7-8 year run. And we just taught the people how to do it. You just slap on a stencil and spray an air gun until you don't see skin anymore. And it's as easy as that. But I was lucky enough to take a really cool concept and be able to market it and sell it and do pretty damn well. So that was an interesting ride as well. And now I'm doing real estate full time and airbrush tattoos part time. So.
Yes, 49 years old,
I've been a successful mobile DJ, a successful ring announcer, a successful entrepreneur, and now becoming a successful real estate agent. So I'm quite proud of the things that I've been able to accomplish.
Well, how does the art of selling a house compare to being a ring announcer? Certainly, you have to do your homework on your prospective homeowner's financial conditions and credit scores.
Well, yeah, well, I don't do the credit scores, the lenders do, but there's a lot of similarities, actually, in all the jobs that I've done. You know, you have to be able to, speak in a manner in which...
Cherish this day as though your firstborn was arriving. Celebrate this moment as though the gods have crowned you. You are the total Diva Olympian.
Hello?
Oh, sorry about that. I think we had some technical issues there, QT.
That's okay.
All right, I apologize for that, but you were saying there were similarities in all of the businesses.
Yeah, you know, you have to be able to entertain people, in a different way, but you still have to be able to entertain them. You have to, like you said, do your research. You have to be able to sell. You have to, understand people's mindset and sort of work within that mindset. For example, if you have a high stress, high pressure client, you have to be able to rise to that, just like if you have a Philadelphia type audience. Sales is sales, whether it's selling real estate, selling airbrush tattoos, or selling a wrestling show to a crowd. Sales is sales. And, if you could, anybody who does sales will tell you, if you could do sales, you could do sales for anything. And, I'm not bragging or anything, but, I think I've been pretty successful. I had a client, I was telling them my story, and he looked at me and he said, "You've had a real interesting life." I said, "You know what, I guess I have."
Now, as far as the wrestling end of it goes today, do you do independent bookings if someone has the right price for you? Do you do the conventions or completely removed today from professional wrestling?
I'll do anything. Being a ring announcer that hasn't really done anything in 7-8 years, relevant for the most part, and understanding that when you're booking a plane ticket and a hotel and paying a guy that you want to get the most, you might have a thought of saying, "Hey, the show would be much better if we could get David Penzer as a ring announcer." But then you got to consider for the $350 round trip airfare, the $200 we're going to spend on a hotel, and the blank number we're going to pay him, we could get a wrestler in there. And while, yeah, having him would be cool and it might be, it might make the show flow better, how much more tickets will we sell if we had, this guy? So I certainly am open to doing them, and I don't get a lot of them, but I never have done one of the big conventions up north. I actually think that would be fun to do one of those Legends of the Ring conventions. But the offer just hasn't come. I'm working with a company called Legends of Wrestling that Brian Knobbs is a part of, and has some partners. And we did a big show at City Field with Bill Goldberg and Rob Van Dam, Scott Steiner, and a lot of the legends that, Bret Hart, Ric Flair was there. And that did well, and we're working on another big show in another market for January. So I'm working with them behind the scenes as well as in front of the on the mic, and hopefully they start to take off. They got a lot of people. You hear Brian Knobbs sometimes, and you think Nasty Boys, Party Crazy, and he could be that, but he's also a very intelligent, hardworking guy, very smart guy when it comes to these kind of events. So I've been doing that, but other than that, I'm available for anything, and I just love the business. I love being around it. I like seeing the guys, meeting the fans. So if anybody out there is interested, let me know.
Hey, Dave, this is QT. I'm sorry about that technical difficulty. I had my mouse on a button, and I mistakenly hit the mouse. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
Dave, do we have time for one last question?
Sure, man.
Oh, all right. A blown call by a referee in the Seattle-Detroit Lions game last week may have doomed the Detroit Lions season and given Seattle millions of dollars in revenue. I was stunned to find out that as much money as the NFL makes, they do not have full-time referees on their staff. They only have part-time. Do you have full-time referees in TNA? And if so, which ones caught your eyes as the best referees?
I think I'm pretty sure TNA pays their referees on a per event basis. I don't know, but for sure. But I'm pretty sure they pay them. In WCW, the referees were employed for the most part. Randy Anderson, Nick Patrick, and other ones, and they were on a contract, so they just got to set them out. TNA, I'm pretty sure that they, and a lot of their referees do other things. I remember there was a referee that stopped refereeing because he was doing television production too. Andrew something, I could see his face, and I can't think of his name. Sorry, Andrew, but. He actually stopped refereeing because they needed him full time to do the production stuff. And, Rudy Charles was sort of Jeff Jarrett's personal assistant back in the day. I think Rudy's now working for WWE. But, Andrew did great. Rudy Charles, all the referees there do a great job. We had back from WCW for a while. So they all do a great job, but I'm pretty sure that they're not full time either. I could be wrong, but I'm 95% sure. But, there's another play that's going to get a lot of controversy that I was watching while I was talking to you that was at the end of the Atlanta game. If it was really a catch or not. It was ruled a catch, then it was ruled it wasn't a catch. So, anyway, it was I'm a big football fan, big fantasy football guy. So wish me luck on my fantasy football teams, please. I got big problems in one league because Jamal Charles just went down, and they think he has a torn ACL. He was my number one draft pick, the third pick of the draft. So I'm in trouble. And I had only won one game. I was 1-3 going into the season, going into the game. Now Jamal Charles went down, so I'm thinking about having a fire sale in that league. But you never know, it's early.
Wow. All right. Dave, you mentioned Fit Finley before. Were you a big fan of Hornswoggle?
It was cute. It was cute. It didn't offend me, certainly. It was unique. And, he's a cool little character.
Yes. All right. Now, did you hear of Turnbuckle Turmoil before Sign Guy contacted you?
I'm not a big podcast guy. I just got on Twitter about a month ago. I'm just not I'm old school sort of in a lot of ways. But no, I hadn't. But I've done a lot of these podcasts lately, and I'm going to start following some. It's sort of cool. They are cool.
Okay. Well, we do ask the existential questions.
Do ask what? Sorry. What was that again? I'm sorry.
We do ask the existential questions.
Yeah, but they were good about the outdoor shows. That was a great question. There's a lot of good questions in there that I've never been asked before. And like I said, I've been doing a lot of these. So.
All right. Well, back to you, Sign Guy.
Thank you, QT. Dave, we got just a few minutes left, so I want to give time to you if there's anything you'd like to say to the listeners today. If you want to plug and promote absolutely anything from social media to your upcoming appearances, if you have any, your favorite bakery, I don't care what it is, the floor is all yours.
I'm on Twitter at David Penzer, all one word. I'm on Facebook, WCW David Penzer. I have a fan page. I'm not a big Twitter writer. I just kind of comment here and there. So if you're expecting, I think some people get on and then defriend me because I'm not on there every day. But you know, when I comment, it's relevant. So if anybody wants to follow me there, I don't have a favorite bakery. If anybody knows anybody that's buying, selling, or moving to the Tampa area, needs a home or a rental or apartment, please reach out to me. I'm happy to help. And keep your eyes on Legends of Wrestling promotion. We got some momentum going, and there's another big show, real big show that we're going to announce very soon, I hope. And keep an eye on that. They're on Twitter as well. It's at like LGNDS. It's real easy to find if you just put in Legends of Wrestling. But it's not the whole legend spelled out.
Well, we want to thank you very, very much for taking time out of your Sunday to be on our show and talk with us. It was a pleasure to have you. Hopefully we'll get the opportunity again. And best of luck with your budding real estate business.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to come back anytime.
All right, fans, if you get the opportunity today, get out there, support some local independent wrestling. I will be in the North Portland, Oregon area later today, and there'll be a blue collar. Come check us out if you're in the Northwest, and we will talk to you next week.